Daily DVR Dives into Mindhunter is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Look good when you step out in the morning. Elevate your style. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today and save 20% on your order. No minimum. Use code DVR20. That's all you got to do. Use code DVR20 today and save 20% off your order. If you've got an event coming up, if you just want to look good, go to cufflinks.com and they'll help you out. They've even got a blog over there that details how to get prepared for these big events and order everything for everyone. You know, that can be a hassle. Let cufflinks.com help you do that. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Welcome back to Daily DVR Does Mindhunter. My name is Axel and my co-host is Heath Zentazzo. You can find out more about us at DVRpodcast.com and also consider supporting us and becoming a patron at patreon.com/DVR. You can also send your feedback at DVRpodcast@gmail.com. Today we're going to be talking about Mindhunter Season 1, Episode 3. Solo, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm immersed into this world of hunting minds, as we call it. And I'm getting ready to part my hair again, just like Holden Ford. I'm ready.
He is a slick one, isn't he?
Yeah. You know what I've been noticing? When he's surprised, when someone says something and he's interested, he does this, like, his face, like, moves, like, oh, really? Like, he's got this. I'm starting to do that too. I gotta stop. I gotta stop, Axel.
I know. It's getting too much, man. You can't be doing that when you're talking to your wife, trying to extract clues from her. He is such a great actor, Goff. He's really amazing. And Groff, I'm sorry, not the quarterback for the Rams.
Yeah, he's playing quarterback too.
He is really has such an openness to him, and he looks so young. But he has such a gravitas. And as we see, like in this episode, the more he's snapping back from that defeat there, and he's throwing himself into this work, and he's getting more confident in himself. And he's getting more confident in following his instincts. And the actor is so amazing at slowly building that up, right? Like, It just happens. And he just embodies that. I think it is kind of because of that. His little face is like, he gets interested like a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly what it's like. And Bill Tench is so the opposite. The grizzled late 70s male drinking, smoking. It's funny. I thought I'd be leaning towards that, doing that all the time, but I'm leaning towards more the clean cut. Maybe I want to do the opposite of what I am. But and it's great because the dynamic between the two of them is just they're polar opposites. But, you know, Bill's one of those guys. He's like one of those, like, I guess you would say, like kind of like me, like the jock who's a closet nerd. You know, it's like, he's that's what he's like, but he's actually very smart. And as we'll talk about in this episode, when they're coming up with the, you know, revision of the profile, boom, their chemistry really picks up in this episode.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Tench does have that kind of, when you see him and he starts talking, it's like typical cop. You know what I mean? Kind of regressive in a sense of that era, but he too is kind of open. And as you get into him deeper, he's secretly like nerdy about it and interested in it. And that's a great way of describing it because he is that type of guy that, like, say you were standing in line to buy something, you would talk and you'd think the conversation was going to go one way and then it'd go another and you'd walk out the store thinking like, hey, he was not really the type of guy I thought he was going to be.
Right. And I'm glad they casted it that way because it does surprise, you know, as you get into the character of of Bill Tench, you see more and more, and you see some of his vulnerabilities as well. Yes. As you start, and it's just a really, you know, sometimes when you read that character, you're like, okay, all right, the breakdown for it, but then you're like, man, there's more depth to this character than just the hard nose. That's the great thing about this show. These characters, you can't judge a book by its cover. Like when you see, like when we go going back to episode one, when Holden Ford is there, he's the negotiator. You're thinking, oh, like, hard nose, you know, Samuel Jackson, or, you know, someone, you know, Chris Noth or something, like, okay, this guy, yeah, Bruce Willis, it's going to take over. And then you're like, wait a minute, that isn't that hard nose guy, you know? And so, and then with the, you know, and then they both kind of change a little bit as they grow and adapt. So that, I mean, that's one thing why I love this show so much, is the characters evolve and they go different ways that you least expect it. And it's just, just great theater, as they say.
Most definitely, man. So we're starting episode 3. And once again, we have a cold open with our friend, Mr. BTK. This is so interesting. He's just looking around, kind of on a street, looking at a house. You hear kind of a car in the distance. He stops. He gets into his truck, which is an ADT security truck, and he drives off. And that's it. That's the whole scene. And I think what we're beginning to see, as we saw in the first cold open, where someone is kind of yelling, where he's kind of harsh with someone that you need to bring back the spindle about the wire, right? Mm-hmm. It's like little hints of him like kind of getting in touch already in this second one of, maybe has he done a crime yet? Is he going to do a crime? Is he just thinking about it? Because we're not seeing him commit any crimes. Right. We're just seeing kind of the process of him being interested in it, almost in the same way that Holden, I see a little kind of mirror here between them, but it's such a quick scene.
You know, and it's funny, I know we're doing this episode by episode. It's a rewatch for us, but I can talk about that. Like, I think when I first saw this, I'm like, oh, there's, you know, the guy again, looks like BTK, Kansas, you know, you figure it out. This time rewatching it, I'm like, oh, is he stalking someone? He's looking at escape routes. It didn't even dawn on me the first time. I guess I was just, you know, you just watch it. Oh, there's a clip there. I see what they're doing. They're going to show, it looks like a pattern. But this time I'm like, oh, this is actually real significant. It'd be interesting to see him after the, you know, all cut together, just to see. But the little hints, and it reminds me, Axel, of the great show The Wire a little bit. You don't get a huge scene, but you get a little scene that actually means more as you go on throughout the season.
Definitely. And I mean, this show, I think that's not a bad comparison. And the greatest kind of link to them is trusting the audience. And that's what you're talking about, right? Like, they're trusting us. Okay, here's a scene. Take it. Investigate like Holden and Tench do, and go from there. And I remember when I saw this, I figured out it was BTK the first time, because I was like, okay, we're watching this. And plus, like I said, our friend Mike is from Wichita, and he would talk about that. So I kind of knew right away in the mindset. And in this one, I kind of thought the same thing, like the same as I thought in the rewatch. He's just investigating. Like you're saying, he's like scoping out a house. He's looking for ways to get away. It's like he's kind of his first little like adventures in doing that, right? And that's kind of what makes it so interesting about what Holden is and Tench are really interested in. They and we come to see this in this very important episode, where right away they're going to, and it's Tench that does this says, let's go meet a friend of mine. I've had contact with her before, and so has the FBI. And she happens to be a person who's going to become a big part of this show, which is Dr. Wendy Carr, played by Anna Torv, a favorite from a show we both loved, Fringe, baby.
Yeah, no, it was a great ad, because you're at episode 3, she makes her first appearance, the one we're talking about now, and it's like, oh, because when I originally watched it, I don't think I knew Holt McNally, that was about it. I didn't know Anna Torv was going to be in this show. So when she pops up, I'm like, oh man, I hope she's, you know, going to be a regular and not just an episode here and there. But it looks, her adding her just adds so much, and it's good to get, and it's so funny because Holden is so, like, I'm not going to say obsessed. I don't know if that's the word, but he's so taken aback and has got this crush on her, probably for different ways, her mind, her beauty, who knows, but he's just so, like, over accommodating to her.
Well, she also represents, I think, a lot of what Holden is attracted to. She's very much like Debbie, right? She's strong. She's super intelligent. She's a little arrogant, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. Like Holden is kind of a little bit. She's, you know, has that confidence to her. She's obviously gorgeous and striking, and she takes command of this conversation almost right away.
Yes.
She is not sitting there and like, oh, this is interesting. She's like, oh, okay, I see exactly what we're going to do. We want to start a study, maybe even publish a book. She's getting right to it because that's her avenue in research. And it's exciting Holden too, because I think that this is just like, wow, this is happening so quickly. I mean, they just moved into their shitty office. They were hiding this from Shepard just a little bit ago. Yeah. Now she's talking about how we can, you know, interview these people, and this is going to be a landmark thing. And it really represents that kind of progressiveness that Holden is really attracted to. And that's why it's so interesting that it's Tench who brings her into the fold.
Yeah.
Again, he shows a side of himself that's different.
Exactly. Because I'm not going to say Holden felt alone per se, but his mode of thinking isn't up to par with Bill's just yet. They're still on same side, but you know how they're at different levels of what they're going to accomplish. And what you said, when Wendy comes in, it's like, boom. Okay, we can do this. We can do that. It's like, oh my God, the female version of me. He's like, yes, that's what I was thinking. Yes. You know, it's just like you're getting all this once. He's like instant gratification. Like, finally, someone else on my particular level, not, you know, maybe, but someone that has the same ideas as him and just has really striking the chords with what he sees for the future.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. And she will obviously, we can say, become a super important part of the show moving forward. Now they have a little bit of a conversation after they leave, and this is one of the many times in which Tench and Holden are kind of guiding this, right? Tench mm-hmm. always has to slow Holden down a little bit, remind him that they are first and foremost FBI agents within the structure of the FBI. They're not these kind of lone wolves out there because this has happened so quickly. You know, I mean, it was only even talking to Kemper was just a lark that Holden had.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's becoming something so much bigger. So you can see that Tench asked Holden to become a part of this. He said, oh, here's a young guy. He's interested. He knew his background. And I think he was impressed by the fact that Holden felt that the guy killing himself in the first episode was a failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this thing is just kind of steamrolling. And taking on a life of its own. And you can tell Tench is already a little bit nervous, you know, about it. And then they now go and try to, since they're meeting with Wendy, they decide to try to meet with another potential serial killer. Sequence killer. If it's
sequence, we're not serial yet. We're not at the Fruit Loops. we're just breakfast, lunch, and dinner right now, and we're not at Fruit Loops, Cocoa Puffs. Just, well, some could say we are, but
that's true. But this does not work out for them. They're not able to meet. They meet with a Dr. Kale, but he explains that that this inmate they're looking for isn't feeling well, or he doesn't want to meet with them. So it's interesting that they throw in this kind of minor setback here right after they are so successful and the study is moving along. They kind of remind us, hey, they can sit in a room and talk as much as they want, but they need the cooperation of these wacko murderers in order to go forward.
Yeah, and Bill's like, that's the last time we tell them we're coming, give it an advance that we're coming, you know? And it just, but it's, you're right, it's good to see this setback because, again, with this show, it's not all network TV roses and wrapped up. It's very real, and you're not going to have the perfect, it's not going to go so smooth. Now, it seems like things are moving fast, and it seems, I think it was like just a little check-in and be like, okay, I know things seem to be moving fast and progressing, but there will be setbacks. And
yes.
And that was perfect to show. Just a minor one, but it made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. And also that the people that they're talking to are not dependable. Right.
Right.
Yeah. That it not only what they're telling them, but if they'll meet with them, how they have to coerce them. And that'll become a larger part, too. Now, we get an interesting we get some scenes with Holden and Debbie, and their relationship is blossoming. And I love her. She reminds me a lot of my wife in a way. She's so intelligent. And when she doesn't she never backs down from him, right? She's always, and not only does she not back down from him, but she's continually challenging him. And he likes that, but I think there's also a part of him that, in this scenes we get in this episode that seems to want a little bit more of that tenderness, but she is really kind of pressing him on the job stuff and keeping him kind of on his toes.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because it seems, you know, with Holden, he's so into this progression of what he's involved in that, but he loves that when she's like kind of giving him new thoughts and challenging him and they're you know, locked into this conversation. It'll be interesting to see where the relationship goes. Because, like you said, what is their relationship about? Okay, they have great sex, and they talk about his work. And she has to study a lot. So we'll see, you know, what's going on there. But yeah, no, she's fantastic. I mean, from the first episode at the bar, she was just a great match for him. You wouldn't think he'd date someone like that, but, you know, again, don't judge a book by its cover. It's what's inside, and they definitely have some sort of connection there. And she is never like, oh, baby, I love you. Oh, yeah. You know, you don't get that.
No, because in this, he's like, I'm obsessed with this case. He's like up late ironing. And she's like, all right, okay, whatever, like. Just don't wake me up when you cut. She does. She indulges him in certain senses, but it's really they seem to be. They're such stark individuals that they just neither of them really relent, and they just kind of agree to coexist. And it's an interesting relationship. She's a fantastic actress.
Yeah. Yeah, she's also in season two of The Sinner, the Jessica Biel. Well, she was in the first season, but it was a new story in the second season. Bill Pullman's character. She's a big part. She's a big character in season two of The Sinner, which is worth it. Because when I was watching, I'm like, I know that girl. I know that girl. You know, one of those. And like, oh, yeah, Mindhunter. But she's really good. You know, it's interesting, Axel, because, you know, we went to college and we kind of, the 90s, it seems like the 90s and part of the 70s are kind of, I'm not going to say kind of the same, but like, it's relatable. Like you definitely, and probably even in the 80s, you have like a woman like that, who's strong, smart, and is kind of also like a free bird, if you will. Mm-hmm. Those are the hardest women to, when you're young. Now, Holden's almost 30, he's 29. But like, if she's like 26, I think, cause she's a post grad. But like, even at that age, when you're a young man, those are tough women to have a relationship with and to be confident with. When, I mean, Holden is smart and whatnot, but like say me at 23, I would have not been able to handle a woman like that. You know, it's just like, you have to give them your freedom. You have to trust them. You have to be intellectual. It's a tough, now where she's dating Holden because he has that, but he's still got a lot to learn and it works. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it'd be very difficult. Like, imagine a young Bill Tench trying to date her. It would not work.
No. Yeah. And well, I think because she's very mature and, really, unlike Holden, she knows herself, I think, better than he knows himself. He's on a path of self-discovery. I think that Debbie has gone through a bit of that at an earlier age. She's more mature than him. Yes. And women tend to be more mature at earlier age.
That's yes, they are.
I found in my life.
Yes.
So she is really the teacher in this, even though she's younger and she's still in school and the academic and he's out there in the real world, you know, I think that she is more mature than him and she kind of can see a couple steps ahead.
She does. You're right. And almost, you know, I start thinking like, man, she'd be great for the behavioral unit. You know,
I know.
But like, they should hire her.
I mean, it was this episode when they got the office in the last episode. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, I hope that she joins them. Like, because her ideas are amazing. But then it's like Wendy is almost, it's like Holden has his work wifey and his home wifey.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and Wendy kind of fulfills that. And in a sense, they are mirrors in this show because it's no doubt that Holden is our central character. And I think that's so interesting the way the show plays back and forth, the way that he kind of has both a mother and wifey relationship with both of them, as so many men and women do with a kind of being a father in a sense, their husbands or boyfriends. But that's another podcast.
Yeah.
That's Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah. Bachelor in Paradise. Yeah. It's almost like Wendy is technically the older version of Debbie.
Yeah.
In a sense. So
definitely.
I didn't even really think of that until now. See, Axel, you bring out a lot of Bachelor in Paradise. A lot of good.
That's why we podcast about it, baby. So they get back to Quantico. They're kind of discussing what's going on. They're excited. Holden is very excited. And Tench gets a call that there's been another incident. Remember last episode, they were told that there was an old woman where she was beaten, but the dog was killed. Mm-hmm. In this case, the dog and the old lady has been killed. This excites Holden, which surprises Tench. But this excites Holden because he says, see, we were right. We were profiling this. And look what happened. This person, unsub, took the next step that we predicted would happen. And they take this to Shepard. I love Shepard. And this is where we get the word sequence killer. That this guy is following a pattern, and they say, let's kind of go forward in this investigation and let's see what happens. And we're getting to see their first kind of fully sanctioned by the FBI, Shepard's on board, on the record investigation. And not only that, but they talk about bringing Kemper in later to kind of find out and talk about it. Mm-hmm. But first they go and we get the whole investigation. This was really interesting, and I especially like the cop that they hang out with while they're here in, where are they, in Sacramento?
Sacramento, baby.
Sacramento Police Department. Oh, and once again, can I just give a shout out to the amazing production design, the props, the cars. We don't mention it enough, but it's just amazing. Like, it's totally seamless that this is 1977. Because I'm right now just looking at a shot of the front of the Sacramento Police Department with the cars lined up, even like the little sign with the time and the temperature, the light, the traffic lights, everything is old school. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and so this is where they had profiled it as, like, they were thinking teenager, early 20s, and now the profile has changed. It goes to, wait a minute, this is a male much older, and then the cop's like, what are you talking about? I talked to every busboy and every, you know, rounded up every teenager I could, and now you're changing it? And they don't even really acknowledge that. They're just doing their back and forth with their profile. They're going boom, yeah. Boom. Oh, it could be this. Oh, this. And but it's, and I feel bad for the detective. But at the same time, this is really the birth of that we're really seeing on screen. Their minds at work, and they're excited, and they feel like they really got a handle on what's happening. And they're, you know, as bad as what they're saying, the news is awful, and this detective's like, oh my God, I'm dealing with them. They're like little kids in a candy shop, just going back and forth. Oh, it could be, you know, so that was interesting. And it was good to see that, you know, Tench and Ford are both, they're on that path. And we'll definitely see that when they interrogate a certain someone.
Taking a little break to remind you of our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. You know, sometimes I just go over to Cufflinks.com. I look at their awesome products and I say to myself, how lucky I am to have this amazing sponsor. They've got the coolest stuff over there. Man, I just, you know what they sent me, and I'm going to be giving these away, some popcorn cufflinks. Listen to all our podcasts at DVRpodcast.com to find out how, but they've got awesome stuff over there. So go to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DVR20. They've got socks, ties, cufflinks, money clips, tie clips, so much cool stuff, even like pocket squares, just any way to kind of make you look good. Those little touches always help. Don't forget the little details, baby, because Cufflinks.com's got them for you. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Use code DVR20 and save 20% off your order. No minimum. This is a great scene, and I love their pitter-patter when they go back to, it's like no one else is in the room, right? It's just them. And what makes me so happy is what we were talking about before, is you expect now at this point for Holden to get into it, because he's like super nerdy serial killer guy.
Yeah.
But it's when Tench gets excited, yes, and then Tench is able to do something that Holden is not, which Tench brings the cop in. It's almost like Holden is talking to Tench. Tench talks back to Holden, and then he communicates and gets the information from the cop or whoever, and then they go back. And then when we see when they eventually find this sad sack living with his mom, who's this oh, boy. Is hilarious. That dude. I might as well be dead for all he cares. Like, this is like so prototypical. And this is where I find I have to, and this is such a great thing that this show does, and we talked about this in the first episode, is we're so used to serial killer, bad guy, SVU, Law and Order, whatever, right? True Detective. But this is like the origin of it. Yes. So they're not afraid to kind of show us the typical or the obvious that this guy would live with his mom and blah, blah, blah. But back then, that's how we got those stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
From cases like this.
Right.
Right? So at first, I could imagine a person watching this show and seeing this and being like, oh God, this is so typical, blah, you know what I mean? But then you start thinking, oh, wait a second, this is the origin of that. So yes. It's actually so interesting the way that they play it straight, and they let the mom be terrible, and they let the guy be a total loser, like incel in his house. You know what I mean? Like they don't try as a TV show to switch it up and trick you.
Yeah. And like great point that you made. A lot of shows, we see, like you said, on SVU, Criminal Minds, we're already in the investigation where murders have happened. The FBI's called in, but usually the serial killers are already like right before Ed Kemper gets caught. Like they're already in the midst of many killings. They've perfected it. They're bad. You know, that's why when I explain people, oh, what is Mindhunter? What is that? Oh, it's the birth of criminal profiling, and it's the origin of how it became what you know about it now. And that's why this is so important that they're the cases here. But this is all, honestly, as I'm reading the book, I mean, this is how it went. And it was great to see, it's great to see someone who is at that point, but yeah, is not full Charlie Manson, whatever, you know, like as we know him, or, you know, it's the origin, and it may seem typical, but understand, you know, people need to understand, and I'm sure they do, they're smart, but this is the beginning of it, and we need to see this. And this is the, and they really, when, I mean, because we've seen them interview Kemper and deal with detectives, but now they're actually with a suspect that could be and is a murderer. And even how they play when they start talking to each other in front of them.
Yes,
that I love that technique. Man. That technique is so good because they're like, wait a minute, the focus isn't on me. Wait, you're talking to me. You're talking to me. It's just, but they go off on their own tangent, but they're doing it to get a rise out of the suspect, the unsub. So, I love, you know, this is a great episode, and I really loved those two scenes. And then even the detective, they're saying some things, and you could tell he's a little uncomfortable at times, but he rolls yes. with it. But he rolls and with it. But he's the, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Actually. That's the
yeah.
origin of this too, where Holden takes on a personality of total and complete empathy with the sadistic side of the person. He mm-hmm. doesn't just empathize with them because when he's talking to him, you know, he's like, you'd never hurt her because she loves you. But this is a guy who murdered, right? Like, and the cop, the look of the face of the cop is like, what the fuck? Why are you opening yourself to this guy? Right? Like you're giving him attention. You're giving him what he wants. Mm-hmm. But Holden knows that he seeks the murderer in this case, this guy, Dwight, seeks that connection, and by giving it to him, he'll open up, and he does, and he admits to it, and they're like these big heroes.
Yeah,
it's on the news, you know, their names and such, but they just say the FBI got him. And then we have this great scene, which is Holden kind of holding court, and everyone really like heralding him as, I think someone calls him Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is, I mean, this is happening so fast, right? We're in episode 3, and it was almost just an idea that Holden had that is already, they've caught somebody. They go out, they go on their first thing. Not only did they catch him, but he profiled him before they even caught him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Tench is holding court, and then when Holden tries to, he butts in because he's kind of Debbie Downer kind of thing, right?
Oh, yes, you're right. You're right. he's kind of standing up there.
Yeah, and then they're like, okay, and then Tench comes in. Well, you know,
but he tried at least, which was surprising.
Yeah, and that's again another thing with Tench is he just knows how to relate to the everyday person. He knows what they want to hear. He really connects. So he has to butt in sometimes with Holden because Holden will start going on tangents like, and you know, and a lot of the everyday police officer isn't ready for that just yet. And so so Tench has to. I always want to call Holt McNally Holden. Now I say, I don't know. He looks like a Holden to me.
Holt and Holden.
Yeah, Holt and Holden. But it just, I just love the development. This episode really kicks in gear their relationship, and you're like, wow, these guys might be a good team. And it just got me excited.
Oh, and the banana in the tailpipe was funny too, where the cops kind of welcome them and that's really important for Holden because he is like always an outsider, right? You know,
right.
He can't even find his place within the FBI and the outside world. He's just, nobody wants to accept him because he's very unique. And Tench has taken him under his wing, but is also seeing that he's becoming not only very confident and successful so quickly, but that other people are noticing him and giving him that attention. And this is where we begin to see the mirroring of Holden and the investigations he's the kind of men that they're investigating, and Tench being being a little concerned about Holden, right? Mm-hmm. And saying, hey, settle down, buddy. As they walk out, he says, oh, maybe you could shine your light and find my keys. You know, because he was trying to say, like, we shine a light on all this kind of stuff. And then we get a little bit of Holden listening to Tench talk to his wife and an indication of the problems that they're having at home with their son.
Yeah. We get a little glimpse of that, and you're like, okay, it's not just roses. I mean, you know, Holden's there awake, but he, you know, in the middle of the night, he's trying to call and you know, have a little conversation. And yeah, you're sensing that something's, it's like, oh, okay. And again, building these characters, and something we almost never see in these shows is the home life. What's going on? How is it affecting their home? What are they dealing? They're real people. They're not just superhero criminal profilers. They're also humans who have relationships and have, you know, family problems. And that's one great thing. And one great thing about the show, when you're just really focusing, say, 3 to 5 characters. I mean, right now we're kind of the two. We got Shepherd a bit, and now Wendy's involved. So we'll see how her character goes. But when you have two characters, it's so easier in a narrative to focus on the two. I mean, if you had like 17 people we're trying to do, it becomes difficult. And a show like this, dealing with criminal profiling, serial killing, all this stuff, you need it small. You can't have too many characters, because then you get lost in the criminal minds, which, you know, show I loved because I knew what it was and I enjoyed it. And I believe that show, like, the first couple of seasons, they did that, but then as all the other characters need screen time and all that, it just got too much. And I like when it's focused only on a couple of characters, because we learn so much and we're on this journey with them. We're not, we feel like we're with them versus a bystander with, you know, a team of 10, you know? So that's one of the key components of it.
I think that's a great point and something that we haven't spoken of previously, which is that this is not a huge ensemble streaming show. And so many of them are, you know, this is not Game of Thrones with 50 old white dudes with beards that you took you two seasons to figure out which one was which. This is basically two dudes, two women, their boss, and some killers, right? And every once and other people come in. So, and really the two dudes. So that's a great point you make, that they focus being able to have us hone in on them and learn a little bit by bit about them. And the stuff with Tench is really revealing. And then they have a fantastic scene here. They go back and they want to talk to Kemper more. That was something that I had to figure out, because they mention, when they first mentioned the killing in Sacramento of the old lady, Holden immediately has the idea of, let's talk to Kemper about it. But they don't do that. They go and they investigate it, and then they go to Kemper after. And they don't talk about the investigation with Kemper. But it made me think of that idea of the old Silence of the Lambs thing, of bringing the current case to the person. But it doesn't happen, but they hint towards it. But instead, they have about a 10-minute scene here with Kemper. Again, this show is amazing. They just drop this in the middle of the show. It's absolutely, like, I could watch it like 15 times. And it's just basically him getting to the nitty gritty of kind of what it feels like to kill someone, and what the reality versus what people say. And we also see that Holden has a tape recorder and he's taking notes at the same time. Mm-hmm. So they're breaking out. I think he had broken out the tape recorder, I think, once before last episode, I think in the second or third interview, because there were three with Kemper in that one. But now he's more comfortable. And we get more of Kemper walking around, touching him, telling him what it means to slice someone ear to ear. This is just a kind of more general creepy interview.
Yeah, and I do notice that Bill isn't as hostile with Kemper as he was the first time. The first time he's just like, you're a scumbag. What, you're going to manipulate? And he's not as, because he was, you know, holding an object and just like, I don't want to be here. You're a crock of crap. But then maybe this profiling success has opened him up a little more. So that was interesting as well.
Yeah. And he says really important things here. I found this particular, even the other three were great and they were more like feeling out, but it's like now Kemper is kind of, he knows why they're there. He feels comfortable. He really is enjoying them listening to him. And like you're saying, Tench is a lot less aggressive. He's just kind of sitting, listening. Holden is doing his thing where he's really empathizing and kind of cutting to the sexual and the gratification parts of it. But they're also formulating in this scene, I think, the idea that Kemper is talking to them about hunting, right? And how he chooses his prey, and it's the killing and exaltation over that prey that gives him a sexual gratification from the kill. And again, that's something we are accustomed of, serial killer people. You know, we hear about this all the time, this connection. But he's so matter of fact about it, right? Like, it's just, it's so amazing, man. This is, these scenes are absolutely incredible, and they're shot so sparingly too. Now, this is the first episode. The first two were directed by Fincher. This one is not. Then he comes back and directs the last two. But they're continuing his style. It's just, it's an amazing scene.
Yeah. Oh, dude, Ed Kemper. I mean, this is like breakout character, breakout actor that I've seen in a long time. And one thing about this show, as you'll see in future episodes, the casting of these criminals are amazing. I mean, I don't know where they get some of these actors. I mean, some of them may be actors that we've seen and stuff, but they change up to, you know, to look more like the real life killer. So we don't, may not recognize them, but man, these guys are unbelievable. It's just, yeah. It's just, and you know what the great thing too, Axel, is like, especially when we first got Kemper, it's like, we don't really need a lot of time. These guys right away were like, we know who they are and we're into it versus, you know, it takes, I don't know about this guy. Oh, okay. All right. The scene's getting better. These are instantly boom. I mean, you're in.
'Cause man. Well, I think also it's that Holden is a student, and he kind of, in the same way that we were talking about the way that this show trusts the audience by showing us short scenes, I think it also trusts the audience by certain things, in the same way I thought the way that Shepard saw what was going to happen. He knew they were going to become a branch, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he knew the way the system worked, but we didn't get a scene where he told us that. Holden knows who all these people are, right?
Yeah.
He's a student of these killers. This has always been his interest.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of getting the cream of the crop, you know?
Yeah.
But like we saw earlier, they don't always want to speak to him. Another important thing that I wanted to say about this Kemper scene is they get really into his mom, and that becomes so important, and that's so important for Kemper. And we saw it in with Dwight, the dog killer,
right?
That these sadistic, hateful moms, like, they're always blaming their mom.
Well, they mention that with Manson too, when they're when they're doing the road school. So we're seeing a pattern here. I mean, it's not always, but it'll be interesting to see if they come up with someone that didn't have a rough childhood or wasn't a mom thing, you know?
Interesting. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but right now, that's the common denominator right now. It's the whole mom thing. And it's like, oh, interesting. Again, back to, are they born this way or are they a product of their environment? So.
Yep. And the most interesting part, too, is that after this scene where it gets really dark and really creepy and you think that Tench was kind of pulling back. No, they go to a diner, they get some beers, and Tench is like celebrating. And he's like, look, I think we're really onto something here. And I think we should bring Wendy in and have her meet with, like, see what we're doing and become a part of this and involve Shepard with that too, which kind of surprised me. Like, again, Tench surprises me, but he's right. They really are onto something here.
Yeah, and I just love the two guys having some bottle of suds out in the by the car. It's just like, it just, you know, brings back to the easier times where you're just having a couple beers, no harm, no foul. Now, forget it. If you tried to have a beer on the sidewalk, the SWAT would be there, and people would be offended. But anyway, it's just like, did I just go on a,
Solo's getting his tench out, the tench out. I'll be the Holden.
You're pinching the tench.
Yeah. It is good though. It's great to see them connecting, because we want them to get along, right? Like,
yeah,
I like these two characters. I mean, I know this is, you know, obviously it's a serial killer show, but as you're watching any television show, you're like with these, you inhabit the space with these characters. And it's good to see him getting along. And I was so happy that Tench was like, yeah, let's do this. And one thing I should say is he says, let's bring Wendy in to prepare something to give to Shepard. He doesn't yet, I think, want to tell Shepard. They're still doing that half thing, just like we're going to interview people and not tell Shepard. They're still doing exactly what you mentioned, which is we'd rather ask for forgiveness than permission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they want to bring Wendy in, but they're not ready. At this point, they're not ready to tell Shepard fully about it. They just want to kind of bring her in and have her kind of look over their stuff and make something that they can prepare to give to Shepard.
Right. Right.
Which I think is kind of, I don't know how important that distinction is, but I thought I'd make it.
No, no, it is, because again, it's building and it's not just,
yeah,
just all of a sudden, you know, it's a process. And next scene, oh, we're fully, you know, ready to rock and Shepard doesn't care and we can do whatever we want. No, it's, they got their certain hours allocated to do their thing. But at the same time, it's, you know, even in, they have to be asked, again, have to be asked into an investigation. They can't just come in because federally, unless something, I think, is cross state lines or is multiple states.
Exactly.
They can't just go in and take jurisdiction. So.
Yeah, jurisdiction, right? Yeah. It's the old thing of who's in charge. But what they're finding is that by being open, and I think really that Holden has a lot to do with that, and that's why we're seeing Tench being so open when the cops ask, because they both have, and maybe that's even why they brought Holden in, right? Why he brought him in is because he wanted to shake it up. He wanted to get involved. People had been coming up and talking to him. He needed a partner in crime here to figure this stuff out. And Holden is so unabashedly interested and open to talking about any case that somebody brings them, and the weirder the better, which is just what these cops are in a situation where the people don't want to talk about the weird cases, right? Like the town doesn't want to talk about it. People don't want to admit that someone raped or killed someone. So this is really, it's just awesome to see Tench say, let's get Wendy, let's bring her in. But before we can do that, we get a scene with Holden and he's getting a little kinky with Debbie. And you can see that he's kind of, and she even says, I could be part of your case study. And she holds like a nail file to his under his chin. And then he bends down and goes down on her. So it's a very like submissive. It made me think of the thing that when Kemper was talking about his mom is an interesting scene.
Yeah, and before that, I wanted to mention real quick with Bill Tench. Even remember in episode one, he's like, maybe we can help each other out. And we're thinking more, oh, he's going to help with the road school, which he is. But maybe Tench had also visions of something bigger, and this and Holden would be able to accelerate the process. Yeah. So, but yeah, with that scene, yeah, it just, oh, the Debbie Holden relationship looks like it's going pretty well.
Yeah, they're very, you know, they're both kind of, they're so intellectual, and then they're kind of bringing it into their relationship. They want to experiment. They have a safe place to kind of play with these ideas on the personal level.
Yeah.
And that is interesting, but that can also go the wrong way, you know?
You never know.
You know, I know. I know. Well, that's another podcast, Solo. Yeah. We talk about our own experiences with nail files and women, but maybe we can talk about that when you complain more about not being able to drink on the side of a road.
Maybe.
All right. So now we have a really cool scene, which is a short one, but it's interesting. Holden meets a guy in the hall and he says, hey, remember we were going to talk about those words that, because this was mentioned in the first episode, that they don't mention at the FBI, like the 7 dirty words. Because Holden is interested in redefining what's acceptable. And he meets the guy in the hall. The guy says, okay, you have to go meet with this woman. And he goes and meets with the woman. And then they have one of the strangest conversations. And it's super hilarious, but he keeps a straight face through the whole thing. Where she's like, pussy, dildo, enema, cunnilingus, fellatio, right? And the, and you see this nail whole file. List.
Yeah. Oh, no, right. Nail file's on.
And he gets these words to be changed. And it's just really interesting. I actually have the list. I could go through it, but I won't. But it's really cool the way that we get a scene with Holden and Debbie where he's taking the theoretical, these kind of sexual, psychosexual ideas of submission and such that he's talking about with Kemper, seeing with the guy with the dog, kind of playing them those out with her. She too learns from her books. Then he goes into the FBI and he takes from the real world, the experience he's seeing, how it can help to be more real and changing the educational, right? The basis of their structure, their institutions, by making it okay for words. No, we can now say fellatio. That's not a bad banned word. We can say this, which they should be able to because they're not speaking about it in a sexual manner, right?
It's
clinical.
Yeah. And again, that's part of the change that's happening at the FBI, the Hoovers, you know, suit and tie by the book, that you have to change with the times. And as culture and society is changing, the old methods aren't necessarily going to work, especially with what they're dealing with now. And so that makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's really cool. I thought I remember when I first watched that, I was so struck by how brilliant a little scene like that is and just how they didn't talk about it. They show him doing it.
Right.
Right. Like they don't just say, oh, we got to change those or they make a big deal about it. It's just a scene and he's changing words. And what he's doing is probably momentously important, but he just does it. He doesn't ask permission again. Right. He just does it because he says, this is not right. And it's like he's been waiting to do that. And then the next scene we get is Wendy arrives. They're waiting for her out front. They walk in together and kind of like Avengers assemble.
Yep.
they're together. And it's a great little kind of walk-off scene. We get great music playing. We should add, the music is always great in this show, especially at the end.
Of course. The music's awesome.
Yeah. And that was just a fantastic episode, man. It's, again, as I'm noting these out, you see the structure. They're paced so well. And like we were talking about the processes that have to happen, like the kind of let's talk to her, then do this, then do that. That's kind of how the episodes themselves unfold to us.
Yeah. Great episode, man. We got a great journey ahead of us, Mr. Foley.
Wonderful stuff. So we will be back pretty soon with episode 4. It's getting better. It's getting awesome. Now, I know people out there are already probably deep into or watching season 2, but we're just asking you to come along in this journey with us because these are evergreen and the show's going to last. And actually, we've had a good response already. And I want to thank people for downloading and listening. You can give us a review. I think actually we're just getting up on iTunes, but we're up on Stitcher. We're getting up on Pandora. Shout out to them. TuneIn. Well, man, all Google Play, all that kind of stuff. So rate, review, subscribe, share with people. We very much appreciate it. We'll be back soon talking more Holden, more Tench, and more drinking beers at the side of the road, Solo.
That's right. And thank you for listening to Nail Files and Curbside Beers. And remember, Axel, I mean, how can you be elected president and not be a sociopath?